Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Alan and Helen Meyer from Careforce Life Keys have been walking with us over the last couple of weeks through a series on the family, and for the next few weeks as well. Last week we looked at our family of origin and how that affects our parenting styles. Well, tonight we're going to look at how parents can actually know each of their kids better, looking at things like birth order and love languages. It'll help us to know the best ways of loving and nurturing each of our children in all their uniqueness, which I'm sure is such a valuable thing. Alan and Helen, welcome back to Open House.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for being here. Let's start by talking about birth order. It's the theory where your children sit in order of birth, whether they are the oldest or the middle kid or the baby of the family. That all actually shapes a lot about their character. How does that happen?
I think we don't want to get too hung up on making this rigid, but it does give us some guidelines on knowing our children. And obviously a firstborn child is going to be the child that gets all the attention, who's nurtured. We expect a lot from them. We kind of do a lot of our learning as parents on our first children.
Yes. And how scary.
Yes, it is. But you often find with the oldest child, they tend to carry a lot of responsibility. That's partly because of their position in the family. And so I guess for children who are the oldest, we really need to make sure that as parents we don't overload them with responsibility and don't expect too much of them in terms of things that are not age appropriate. For example, we had a family that we were helping, and they had a six-year-old who was looking after the two-year-old but was left alone to look after the two-year-old. And when something happened with the two-year-old, the six-year-old was criticised and chastised. It's just totally inappropriate.
At six?
Yes. So I think, well, when parents are under an incredible amount of pressure and they've got an oldest child who's particularly responsible and quite articulate, they can really overlook the fact that this is still a very little person and needs to be cared for. Mm. So particularly oldest children often grow up to be adults who take on responsibility and quite readily. But if they grow up in a family that is quite fractured, they can be the kind of adult that is over-responsible, feels over-guilty about things. So that's another thing to just be aware of. Middle children are often the children, people say, I don't want to be the middle child, it's not a really good place to sit. But often those children can be independent thinkers. They're kind of the ones that often think laterally about things. They find interesting and different ways to do things. They can be quite circular about the way they make decisions. But again, it does depend on the child's wiring. I mean, you don't want to get into making that rigid.
No.
But when a youngest or a third comes along, very often, though, middle children are the ones that can be sometimes overlooked because they're neither the oldest responsible or the youngest, the baby, and the youngest can often get away with more. And partly it's because parents get a bit more relaxed by the time they might get down to number three. And they're not quite as nervous about what they do and say around nurturing that child.
So what about a family where there's one child? The only child thing.
Yes, well, the one child or the only child tends to, I guess, almost take on the role of the oldest child. And they can grow up very quickly because they're living in a very adult-oriented world. There can be a lot of expectations on an only child because the parents are inputting all their hopes and their dreams into that particular child. And so it's really important when you're rearing an only child that they get lots of time just to be themselves, time to relax and not have expectations placed on their life that are something that they feel that they're always trying to measure up to please the parent. It's quite a significant role in life to be that one.
There's one other issue I think it's particularly potent and appropriate in this day and age, the blended family dynamic. So these are kids who are thrown together outside of their own immediate family. What about the dynamics that go on there?
This is a very complex issue, and when two people are wanting to get married and they've both got children, it's really important that there's a lot of pre marriage counselling, not just for the couple that are getting married, but for the children themselves, because it can shift the whole dynamic within the family. A child who is the oldest may have someone come in who's older than them, and so their position in the family is changed. You might have a child who is the youngest, and there's a younger sibling that comes in from that married relationship, and they're no longer the youngest. And all kinds of conflicts around that can arise. It's really important that there is family counselling, that the children are involved in all of that, in bringing those kids together and being aware that this is going to shift the dynamic within the family, and it's going to take some work to make sure that they're working as a harmonious unit.
So the point I was going to make, this is not something that's going to happen naturally.
No, it does take intentional work and being aware of how the children are going to feel and the struggle they may have in seeing a role that they had or the standing they had with one parent suddenly change.
Mm. Alan, kids have different ways of expressing and receiving love as well, I think, no matter where they come from in their family. How can we identify the best ways to show love to our children, do you think?
Marriage and family is like an extended university course.
That's interesting.
Yes. I really think that we need to adopt the view that of all the education I will ever do in life, there is none more important than becoming a PhD on my own wife or husband, and then becoming a PhD on my own kids. You just never stop learning. And you'll realize it is probably the most significant educational process you'll ever go through. We would like everybody else, I guess, when you have children and have had almost no training as to how to handle them. The birth of our first child was a delight, and in that Jennifer was a benignly self-managed and happy child. She was very compliant, very easily managed. She would lie in her cot and coo until 9 o'clock in the morning, and where she might get a little irritated if breakfast hadn't been served. And we felt like we were the best parents in the world. No. We couldn't understand why other people couldn't control
their
kids.
What a great start.
Yeah, we were experts.
we were just so obvious that we had the touch. Then our next one was born, and most of the myths were shattered. Kids are different. Whoever said children are a tabula rasa, they're a clean slate, never had any children.
That's right.
They come from the womb with such an extraordinary degree of unique wiring that you spend so much of your life seeking to understand them. If I would look back on the mistakes of parenting, it would be that I needed to have tuned in more to the question of how is this child different from the others? When you've spent some years already working with one, and then the next one comes, and you assume that the things that will bring correction, delight, understanding, wisdom, etc., to the second will be identical to the first, you set yourself up and the children for failure.
Yes.
Because they respond differently. My first child, I only had to look at her sternly, and she would get the message and make the adjustment. To confront the second child was to set him up for an internal reaction that could easily be described as rebellion, but it wasn't. It was self-protection. Everyone wants to be accepted, they want to be valued, and they want to be loved. We express that, and we seek it out in different ways. The compliant child discovers that the way to get accepted is to just line up and just do what you're told. The child that's more complexly wired than that, when you confront them, in the question is, well, how am I going to get acceptance now? How am I going to express my value now? And sometimes they will fight you. And it looks like rebellion, and it's not. It's just a hungry and empty heart longing to be accepted, valued, and loved. And it took me significant time to realize that the way in which this child needed to be loved, cared for, was so different. One confrontation would change for him, for the second child, confrontation would solidify the opposition.
Yes.
And the way to get through to this one was to go and gently tell him your heart, and he would melt. Once he understood that he wasn't being threatened, that his value was not being assaulted, that you cared for him, you had to work with him like you didn't have to work with the second. And then the third was different again.
No, thank
and
you.
And then the fourth was different again. Yes. So I have four uniquely different children, and with every one of them, it is my responsibility as the parent to try to figure out how do I bring affirmation to this child? What will do it? For some, it's words. For others, it's time. It's sharing your heart. It's explaining things. And this may conflict with our own personal wiring. I don't want it.
Yes,
now, but,
yes.
I like it when people just leave me alone. That may not be what another child, what one of your children needs. The difference between quality time and quantity time in a child's life.
Big issue today.
What is it that will bring a child to the place where that miraculous moment where they open their ears and their heart and let you deposit your values and your insights for life? What is it that will do it? For some, it'll be to have spent time speaking kindly and physically holding them and touching. For others, it'll be an hour or two on the side of a river with a fishing rod in your hand, yeah, where finally that moment comes. For others, it'll be buying them something or in serving them in some way that really gets through to them that mum and dad really love me, they care for me, and then the moment comes.
Yes. Can I finish by asking you both to deal with one burning question that could probably occupy another three series in our series, teenagers. What are some of the ways that parents can really know and understand their teenagers better, do you think?
Well, I think the most important thing is not to lecture your teenager. I think our world is full of so many places where we can be anxious about them and be concerned about their welfare that very often as parents, we just want to make sure they understand the ins and outs of everything and we lecture them. And they will switch off. And I think that's very important. One of the things I found really practical was when you're driving somewhere is a great time to talk to kids, especially teenagers, because they're on the move, they don't feel trapped. And that I found often was a time when I could talk with them.
Yeah. Let me say, I heard James Dobson say this many years ago, back in the 1970s, watching a parenting program that he was doing, and he shared something that has been so helpful to me. He said, you need to have a conversation with your teenagers individually, and you need to explain to them, we are going to face a challenge. You are a child and I'm the adult. Here's the problem. You will want to chart your own course. I have the responsibility to help you do that in a way that is both legal and moral, yes, and appropriate. And it's going to mean there are going to be times of conflict. Now, you need to know this. When the conflict comes, I am not your enemy. I love you. So let's make a decision that when that conflict comes, you say, I want to go out. And I say, no, this is not an appropriate time. And now we're at loggerheads. Let's make a decision that in that moment, we will not allow the moment to tear us apart. Mm. That, I think, has been valuable. And let me say one other thing. The importance with teenagers of sharing your heart with them, explaining yourself to them, explaining how conflict arose with you and your parents and how you had to wrestle to resolve that. Let them see your own struggle with teenage years and your compassion and desire for them. And one other thing, pray for, yes, your kids.
Absolutely.
Let me say this. Jesus was like a parent with his disciples. You can't stop your kids from making every mistake in the book. You just can't do it. You can't be there and stop every mistake. Jesus knew that Peter, one of his inverted commas kids,
yeah,
was about to make a dreadful mistake. And he said to him, Peter, Satan has desired to have you that he might sift you like wheat, but I have prayed for you that your faith will not fail. one of the most vital things you can ever do for your kids is you pray for them. You seek God in not manipulatively in front of them, "Oh, God, save my kid." No. Right. You do this in the quiet of your own prayer life. You get on your knees and you cry out to God for your children. My brother came to Christ the very day, the night after my mother found herself in hours of prayer with seeing a picture of him with chains all over him. She prayed for him through the night. The next morning he came home from a dreadful experience of making mistakes with the drug scene and gave his life to Jesus and began a whole new life. The reality is that a parent's prayer counts in God's ears.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Pray for your kids. Yeah. Pray for them. And as Helen said, you can't lecture your way to a healthy and happy life. There's only so much you can say. Then get on your knees and pray for your kids.
For therein lies the power. Alan and Helen Meyer from CareForce Life Keys, thanks so much again for joining us on Open House. Look forward to catching up next week.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.